Your ass better call somebody.
When you pull back the curtain, look under the hood.
You gotta give it that fuck good. Spent all that night here.
I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm out.
I just came for the boobies.
Hey, what's poppin', everybody?
You're Mr. Feel Good. I'm Mr. Shit on Everyone's Hopes and Dreams.
I want to thank me for believing in me.
Often imitated, never replicated.
It's the balance of life, my friend.
I'd like to take this time to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Don't fuck this up. Count on you.
What is good, everyone? Welcome back to 40 Chess Dynasty Football Podcast, episode 124. Thank y'all for rocking with us for this long and second iteration. Maddie, Mike, Scott, and Chris Hansen. What's up, Maddie? Did you have a good Thanksgiving, good holiday with the fam? I know I did. I got fat on turkey and ate way too much.
So much damn tryptophan on that day. But I love it. You know, I wouldn't have it any other way. And we're finding out, you know, as we talk through before we hit the record button, your boy's a bit of an American. I'm an American cutie pie here. I love 4th of July. I love Thanksgiving. Those American days where you just kind of you drink, you eat, you laugh, you have fun, you celebrate, you know, what the history of where you live. It's some great holidays, but also Thanksgiving's sick because you get that long weekend, baby.
American Pie. Funny story about the song American Pie, Maddie, you know, by Don McLean. Legendary song. That one is one that disc jockeys, you know, I don't know if there's any like true disc jockeys anymore running them late night radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like I maybe have the voice for radio because I definitely don't have the face for podcast or YouTube. But the old school disc jockeys, they used to love that song, right? Because it's so long. You put that song on and then you're free to go take a dump. You know what I mean?
That's smart. It's smart.
Entertain
it's
probably, the people.
That's a little bit of the Freebird thing, right? American
Pie and Freebird back to back. Long poop.
Did we long kind poop. Of find like the two songs that symbolize Thanksgiving and 4th of July?
Yeah, Freebird and American Pie.
Freebird, American Pie, baby.
The day the music died. The day the 40 Chess Dynasty Football Podcast died. Talking about taking a dump with really long songs. Now, I had a good Thanksgiving. Made a bomb-ass turkey for anybody who follows the channel. I'd been talking about it. It turned out everything, you know, how I wanted. And I think I offset the tryptophan by brining that thing in sweet tea. You know, enough sugar, enough caffeine in the tea, you know, keep you motivated. I still took a nap, though. Watching the fucking Giants Cowboys just put you to sleep. Just
night. Is that CeeDee Lamb on the side?
Just sleeping. Fuck that. That was terrible. Terrible game. But hey, we got a little bit of redemption with the football this weekend. We got some redemption last night. I know there were some matchups won in a playoff crunch time, Maddie, with Jerry fucking Judy and Jameis Winston going bananas. So shout out David and Joku too for helping me secure a dub. You know, two tutty game. Let's go.
So wait. Jerry Judy. No, Devon Vele had the 294 receiving yards.
Wow.
You had it wrong. Devon Vele was the one that went off, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't think Devon Vele is a friend of the show anymore. I don't.
Well, you know, punks jump up to get beat down. You can't let us talk smack and then go out and get one catch for 4 yards.
Yeah.
Never it was.
All those people who took that advice of trading your second round pick for Devon fucking Vele. Hope you listen to this podcast and you're like, dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah,
but sorry. I also hope the people who listen to this are smart enough to know why not to in the first place. But, Maddie, it is crunch time. The, for most people, last week before the fantasy football playoffs. How we doing? How's the outlook of your squad, your portfolio, your redraft, your dynasty? How you looking in a lot of these? Was it a good year so far, or is it going to be a sweat fest this week?
I have my sweat fests come from my dynasty teams. My redraft portfolio is pretty damn good this year. And the reason being, when we put together the shit sheets in the summer, it leaned running back as like a kind of a tiebreaker. It was, of course, receivers early, but I came away with a lot of AJ Brown's early, Garrett Wilson's. So I wasn't hurt too badly, you know, somewhere at the top going running back, receiver. But I got a lot of A-chains. I had a lot of Najee Harris late. And, I got a lot of those type of running backs that have just carried us through. So my redraft looks good. But, man, there's this one league that I'm in, my home league, of course. The first seed through the fifth seed is 9-4. Then the sixth seed and the seventh potential player, so the first out, are 8-5. So the buys, the playoffs, it all comes down to this week. So this week is a threat. And it's going to be a little bit of what we're talking about here, right, is how we manage trades at this time of year. But it's bananas right now. The chat is going wild. The boys are going nuts. The market is hot, as they would say.
It is. Just looking at my portfolio from a snapshot perspective, looks like I'm going to have about 9 number one or two seeds. So I'm going to enjoy nice first round buy. So that's always a good start. And about half of my portfolio, which is 60 leagues, Maddie, looks like we're in position to make the playoffs. I do have a few 7 seeds that are going to be sweating it out this weekend. Needs a little luck, a little help. Yep. But probably going to end up with, kind of the norm. Kind of the norm for me. I don't know why this works out for me every single year, but about 33% of my teams are always in it, ready to compete, ready to probably place in the money. There's about 33% that are going to sweat it. So these are my, 5, 6, 7 seats. And then the rest are, you had no fucking chance from the jump, but I'm okay with that. I do enjoy rebuilding. I really do enjoy rebuilding. There's a strategy to it. So Let's talk about it, man. Where do you want to start? You want to start with the contenders, the sweat fest this weekend, or, there is going to be people who listen to this podcast who have teams, have portfolios, which you're on the outside looking in, and if your trade deadline's this week, there's still some moves to be made. There's still some meat left on the bone from Thanksgiving that you could extract. Let's talk about the strategy behind it, Maddie. Which direction do we want to start? The good or the bad?
Let's start with contenders, but actually you brought something up that I think we should touch on briefly before we really get into the meat and the potatoes. Before we get into the turkey and the stuffing and the main course, let's have some charcuterie board. Let's kind of warm up a little bit with this one. Should leagues have trade deadlines in Dynasty, or should we let this thing ride all year long?
Ooh, this is always a hot button topic for lots of shows all over the place. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy listening to opinions, even though most of them are wrong on this. So that tells you where I stand, Maddie. No, there should not be any fucking trade deadlines in Dynasty Leagues, period. There shouldn't be. If I have heard proposals for, like a good friend of the show, Thomas Tipple. I love everything he does over there at Dynasty Points, working for Fantasy Points. Fantastic dude, better human. He kind of brought up this hybrid model, like as teams get eliminated, then you're back in the trade pool so you can still make deals and that kind of thing. Fuck that, man. We're all adults. I hope so. And really, at the end of the day, it's Dynasty. Yes, people will point to, man, I was in the championship and then my opponent, made this deal and he got this great running back and whatever. It's the reason I lost. You had the same fucking opportunity to do it. You just didn't. You just didn't.
Yep.
And as a rebuilder, like if I'm on the outside looking in, two people duking it out for the money in the last week or duking it out anytime in the playoffs. And that level of raising the bar, like, hey, man, Steve's over here. And this is what he's offered me for my Saquon Barkley share. Do you want to? Yeah, I came to you to see if you wanted to up it, sell yourself to the highest bidder. I'd love to have Saquon, in 2025, maybe into 2026. But on rebuilders, I'm trying to extract the most amount of value. And listen, Saquon's still a running back. Bad things, knock on wood, can still and will happen to these guys, a la Christian McCaffrey, RIP. That was fun for a couple weeks. Welcome back, and then see you again.
See
but you. This kind of stuff happens. So, like, if I'm able to offload those type of assets to the highest bidder, like when the stakes are the highest, you best believe I don't want a fucking trade deadline in my league. I want that ability to just go and just hammer people. Like, you will see ridiculous deals in the playoffs where it's like, wow, I can't believe they got that much for Will Levis. You know, like, I can't believe you offloaded Will Levis for a first and a second. How'd you do it? Mm-hmm. Bro needed a quarterback, and I was the only one selling, apparently. Like, that's how you get some of that stuff done. And then I always loved the ability as a contender on the other side. Obviously, I want to be able to still trade in the playoffs, but I get it. Like, people kind of frown upon it, Maddie, but I love the ability to just have that pivot, to have that out, and just, like, how fucking gross or how crusty am I going to get to try to win this championship? Like, how much do I want to scratch and claw? Like, that 26 first. I really don't want to trade it away, you know, just in case, because this team looks like it might fall apart next year. Mm-hmm. But listen, I got the opportunity right now to possibly win some big old cash. Fuck it. All bets are off. I want to push in. So that's my my soapbox moment of why I don't believe in dynasty leagues there should be a fucking trade deadline ever. Never.
This is where in post we're going to cue the applause, because I completely agree. And I will. This is kind of how I feel about it as a whole, and hobbies in general almost are synonymous with effort, right? I mean, whether you're collecting cards, effort is rewarded. Whether you make sculptors, effort is rewarded. Hell, even if you're into like mixology, effort is rewarded. Fantasy is a hobby, and the effort should be rewarded. If I want to be a sicko and be on my sleeper app for 12 hours a day for the entire season, I should be rewarded for it. And I hate, this is what I hate, this is what I cannot stand. When this topic is brought up, you'll hear sometimes, well, the NFL has a trade deadline. And cool. It's like, cool. First of all, they have, every single one of their teams is going max effort, balls to the wall, every day. It's literally their livelihood. The playoffs, the cutoffs, the urgency lights a fire under everyone's asses, because we all play in a bunch of leagues, and we all know that not everybody is in these streets like we are. They're not trying. So they could just not answer. They could just not make trades. Then this time of year, or in the playoffs, that it gets ignited, and then all of a sudden they're making trades. Now you have all 14 guys in your 14-team league slinging deals. You won't have that around Halloween. You certainly won't have that leading up to Thanksgiving. That's just not how most leagues work. So that's a huge difference. And the other difference is, I mean, the NFL has a deadline. It's a paperwork thing. This isn't because they want it to be fair or just or morally on high ground. No, it's because they wanted to not have to file the paperwork in the transactions of a trade and then pivot their focus and their resources towards the playoffs, getting ready for that, or the offseason, blah, 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 blah. That has nothing to do with fantasy. This should be a case where if you want to make trades in the fantasy championship and you want to be grinding the phones and selling off future assets to bolster your lineup and win the arms race, you should, because at the end of the day, if your league doesn't thrive off of that arms race, then you don't have a fun league. You should find new friends, because that arms race is the best when you're 8-5 and you're playing an 8-5 and winner gets in and you see him trade for a defense. You go, fuck it, I'm getting a better defense. He trades for a running back. Fuck my first round pick. I need another running back. And it becomes this pissing match that is the basis of all of our competitions that we just love. And if you're in fantasy, you want to compete, this is how we, as the nerds behind the computer screen or behind the phone, can compete. Because at the end of the day, we set a lineup, they can get hurt in the first quarter, and we're Foxville. Yeah. Or a guy like Jerry Jeudy can go for damn near 300 bills when he hasn't really been, he's been an afterthought most of the season. So we can't handle that. We can't control that, and that's fine. But what we can't control is our effort and how much time we put into it. And I just feel like taking that away completely turns fantasy into the takes it from the most fun it could be and just makes it as like whatever as it, you could possibly do. I am such a proponent of no trade deadline in Dynasty. And to be honest, redraft you have to because there's just no. There's no benefit for the last place team to make trades, and it's always collusion. So I get that. That's a totally separate subject. But in Dynasty or in Keeper Leagues, there should be no trade deadline.
I'm with you. Anything that has a future outlook shouldn't have a trade deadline. It really, the argument that people make about the NFL trade deadline is so fucking ridiculous. One, there's 32 teams. We play in leagues with, you know, some people are
with 53-man rosters.
Yeah, with 53-man rosters. Like, when you trade a player in the NFL, that you're trading an employee of yours to some other team so they can be the employee. They have fucking families. They have houses. They have cars. They have. There's all the logistics that go into a player
moving teams. They can yell at you.
They can yell at you. Right. Like, they have to go in and learn the playbook of whatever the fuck they're doing. Could you imagine like one of these superstar quarterbacks just getting dumped, you know, like right before a team goes into the playoffs and it's like, oh, by the way, Jaden Daniels now plays for the Los Angeles Rams. And like the Rams are, oh, they're going to be Super Bowl favorites now. You still got to learn the fucking team.
Offense
built, like, it's not the same fucking thing. All right. There's a reason it's called fantasy football. Yeah. And not real life football. Jesus fuck. God, what a terrible argument. That's one of the most gross arguments I think I've ever heard.
Just, it's lunacy.
Just straw man bullshit. That's what that is. All right, Maddie. You're a contender. A real contender. Maybe not a sweat fest. But, actually, let's talk about it from the sweat fest standpoint. Because this got brought up in the Discord today. Savage chat with some moves. And I kind of wanted to discuss it. Adam and I have talked about this before, the difference between lineup and best ball leagues. And the premise of this discussion, at least for a fringe playoff team, was a best ball league. And they were like, do I go out and do I buy a couple crusty pieces, you know, just to try to solidify it and see what happens. So let me get your take on this one first. You're a best ball. You're playing in a best ball league. You're the sixth seed. You're not even close to the number. It's not like you just had a string of bad luck. You know, it's maybe one of these South Harmon leagues too, with the median, right? Where you get double wins or double big losses records, or split them, right? So there's a big discrepancy between the two. So some of these you might be like 16-15 or some shit like that. You know, just barely over 500, but you're the sixth seed, barely holding on in a best ball league, Maddie. Are you sending any type of real assets to try to bolster yourself for the playoff run? Or are you riding with what you have? Like, are you just going, all right, this is where we're at. This is what it is. Maybe I make the playoffs. Maybe I don't. I make the playoffs. Maybe I get gaped in round one. It's just back to the drawing board. Or are you that, like, Goonies never say die? You know, like that kind of like, fuck it. I'm doing whatever I can to try to win this thing.
So this is how I'll say it, because I don't want to say I'm both, because that's just kind of a cop-out. What I will say is I will always explore the opportunities to get better, but what I would have done before even kicking any tires is kind of define my core, define my path, and I'm not deviating from the path. So if I look at a roster that has, you know, Lamb and he's kind of like my, call it a franchise guy, and I have good running backs, but they're really not the type that transcend year to year. Maybe I will trade one of those if I have an extra piece to get, you know, two crusty pieces and kind of expand, because this is best ball. We kind of do benefit from expanding those rosters as opposed to lineup. You're trying to sharpen the sword. But no, I'm not really deviating from the plan. I'm not giving anything of substance. I'm staying away from the second rounders. I'm not saying I wouldn't trade it, but we're talking about bona fide first round talent, no doubt about it. Difference makers, if I'm even trading a second, that doesn't happen. That can all, you can talk that as much as you want, but that's just kind of la la land stuff. That's not real. But I am always kicking the tires. I am always trying to see if I can get a Adam Thielen before he goes off for 25 fantasy points, see if I can do it for a fourth, or if I have, you know, one of these 2024 rookie running backs that haven't fired yet. Like if I have a Marshawn Lloyd, something, you know, players of that nature, will I shed that off in hopes of, you know, bringing in, like I said, Adam Thielen, Juwan Johnson, Jameis Winston, you know, these kind of 4 weeks, all or nothing, give it everything you got. I will try, but I'm definitely not deviating from the structure, what I've deemed my core, and kind of the path I'm going to go into next year with. I'm not going to mess with that because, you know, if you're a six seed and you're a clear six seed, Cinderella stories, you know, they're awesome and you want to chase them, but it's not worth breaking your back over.
Here's the big one for me, the big differentiator. And Coop had done a fantastic podcast on this, multiple ones, Grinding the Edge in the off season. Mm-hmm. Check it out. Comes out on Saturdays. Coop is a very data-driven guy. Coop looks at the actual data through sleeper leagues, and he was able to pull all kinds of stats about advance rates and who wins championships and from what seeds. And, you know, essentially, just for all playoff formats, having a bye is fucking massive.
Huge. I mean,
most of your champions are going to come from the one or two seed. Just legitimately. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that always stuck with me, and this was something that was always in the back of my brain when I really transitioned over to playing a lot more best ball, and now most of my portfolio is best ball leagues. In best ball leagues, because of the way it's structured with good teams with good depth, always just kind of kicking variance in the teeth, right? Like mm-hmm. Jerry Jeudy was probably a wide receiver 6 or 7 on a lot of people's best ball rosters.
Yep.
You didn't have to worry about whether you started him or not in lineup. Captured what he did on Monday night. Best ball, you just enjoyed the 60 burger that he dropped.
Yeah.
Said, well, thank you. That kind of roster construction, the way best ball's played with depth teams, if you're good and you're a 1 or 2 seed in best ball, you are even more likely. And Coop's got the numbers behind it. I don't remember what the percentage increase was, but from lineup to best ball, it was a lot more prominent in best ball leagues than it was in lineup. Lineup still deals with a lot of variance. It still does because you're picking who you want to start. And like you mentioned earlier, shit, the dude might go out in the first quarter, pull a hammy, you know, we're going to call it the T. Higgins, you know, pull a T. Higgins on you.
Pull a T.
And you're fucked. Like that one bad thing now gives you a 0 in the lineup position. In best ball, if he did that, it's like, okay, I got 5, 6, 7 other receivers on my bench to possibly have a game that could replicate or duplicate what I thought he was going to do. So in lineup leagues, I mean, you've played long enough, redraft, dynasty, lineup leagues, the old school stuff. We see 5 and 6 seeds all the time win 3 games in a row and boom, champion. You see that kind of shit in the NFL, you know, wild card team gets hot and goes. The variance is all over the place in lineup leagues, though the data does show that you're much more likely to win a championship being the 1 or 2 seed in the lineup. In best ball, it's I'm not going to say it's doubled because I don't want to speak ill of, you know, what Coop's numbers say. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the percentage was, but it was pretty obvious that in best ball leagues, if I ain't the 1 or 2 seed or a really good 3 seed that's, you know, just starting to get hot and I'm not roster constructed correctly, there's a reason my record is what it is and I'm the 5th or 6th seed. Like, there's a reason I'm down here and there's a reason that the top teams are the top teams. So if I'm in a best ball league, I would say this. Heading into the playoffs as a 5 or 6 seed, I ain't doing shit. I ain't doing shit. I might actually do the opposite and wave the white flag. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yep. One of you super contenders, you know, want some pieces? You know, maybe try to improve my draft slot by 1 or 2 spots and go like, just really ain't going to do it. I get it, though, if you really want to, and I think this is probably where I'm going to land on a lot of these 5 or 6 seeds in fucking best ball that do make the playoffs. It is what it is, you know. I'm still going to grind the waiver wire and try to hit a fucking home run. Trenton Irwin from a couple years ago when he became the starting receiver and had a hell of a run. Try to find one of these playoff week winners to help bolster whatever, but unless the deal is just something stupid, you know, it's like, you know, I'll take a third, you know, your third round pick for Jameis Winston for the playoff run. You can use this extra quarterback, unless it's kind of like how Congress described porn. Can't really describe it, but I know it when I see it. Unless it's one of those like really good deals where it's like, this didn't cost me shit or this was such a slam dunk, I'm probably not doing shit. I'm probably not doing shit in best ball leagues. I probably am not doing shit in lineup leagues either, just because the numbers dictate that I don't have a great chance. But I am much more likely there to be like, fuck it, I got a gut feeling about this one.
Or, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, why not? You know, Goonies never say die, that kind of thing. Like,
and of course,
I'm going down swinging.
The league matters. Like, a home league or like our South Harmon leagues, like the. If the leagues where you're, like, you're trying to grit it out because you don't want to lose to your buddies, like, I am more likely to just freaking go out. Like, you ever see the movie, you ever watch The Matrix when Mouse goes out with the double Tommy guns?
Yeah.
He knows
he's
going to die, but he whips out all the ammo. I will go out like that in those leagues. Like, fuck it, I'll figure it out later. But in my more, like, nuanced deals might not be as prevalent. It might not be as active. Yeah, I'm not really doing a ton. This is one of those like special situations. I got four round threes. Maybe I'll go fucking spend one. I'll let that burn a hole in my pocket a little bit. But yeah, in terms of like making any type of damage to my future plans in the fifth or sixth seed, especially in best ball, it's just a perfect way. It's the best way to end up back in the fifth or sixth seed next year.
What about as a top contender? So you're a top contender in best ball, and it's, you know, leagues do have trade deadlines. I do need to acknowledge some of the early South Harmon leagues too, like the patron leagues that we started way back in the day, still have trade deadlines on them, right? I haven't changed them. I won't change them until somebody, we bring up a vote and it passes, you know, with a majority, I would prefer. That's why now when I start a South Harmon league, it's like, these are my settings. You guys don't get to vote on any of this shit. Right. There's no trade deadline, and we're doing the fucking draft before the NFL. These are non-negotiable. You want to be in this league? Here's the fucking rules. Everything else, we can put on the table. But this is it. But the early ones, there's a few, like I'm going through and doing waivers and get that sleeper notification, trade deadline this week. And I'm like, fuck it. God damn it. So you're in position, right? You got trade deadline this week. Could be a best ball, could be a lineup league. What's some of the things you're looking at doing for your teams, Maddie, in those positions?
If I'm a one or two seed, I will do everything that I can to get better. I will do everything I can to get better because I am of the belief that championships don't come easy. And especially if we're talking about like the home league, like the one league where we don't care about our portfolios. We don't care about ownership percentages. We don't care about roster construction as much. We care about championships because you want to show up to next year's draft with the trophy, the belt, etc. Those leagues, and I am only in a couple of like those leagues where I'll get naughty. Like I will get a little naughty. And I'll just do everything I can to improve the team. Now, in my more like best ball dynasty portfolios where you're in a number of leagues where you're like, all right, if I just make sure I hit this threshold, I'll cash out for the year. I'll make a little money off the top, blah, blah, blah. Like those aren't, I don't get as passionate. I don't get as driven. And I'll check to see if I can make a trade. But I'm not like, all right, I'm gonna attack this guy, make this trade, I'm gonna do this and that. But in the leagues like that, I want the ship, man. I don't like losing, especially to like your buddies, and I will get crazy. Now, for our baseball fans out there, if there's any, Dave Dombrowski versus Chaim Bloom, two different Red Sox team builders. One went all out for a championship and got it. One did the Alan Soslowski never win strategy, and now he is no longer building the Red Sox roster. So I am 100% Dave Dombrowski when I'm focused on when I smell it, or if it's a this is an interesting question that I actually had a conversation with a buddy about it. You would think that. I would say the casual fan of fantasy would assume that we would grind more in our high dollar leagues. I find myself not wanting to ruin it too much because I want to make sure that I'm always kind of chipping away at a championship, because if you do win one, it pays you know, you end up coming away with a lot. And I don't want to put myself too big in a hole next year, too much behind the eight ball. So in my bigger money leagues, I find myself actually being a little less aggressive. How are you with the big money? Now, that's kind of a separate subject, but I was just having this conversation. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I actually end up just treating everything equally, right? The minute the league dues are already paid and the season starts, to be completely honest, in a lot of stuff, I just forget how much the fucking entry fee was anyways.
Yeah.
Right. So I treat it the same as I do. You know, I'm in a couple, like I took over orphans for people. You know, right. They're like, hey, it's a best ball league. You don't have to do much. You don't have to worry about setting a lineup. If it's something like that, if it's a best ball league where I can handle the portfolio, I'll be in some leagues where there's like $25, $30 entry fee. Like, I just don't fuck it. I just add it to the portfolio. It's not no skin off my back. So I treat everything the exact same, though. Like, I have no idea whether or not it's a $25 league or whether or not it's, you know, we got one where it's like a fucking $250 entry league, you know, something along those lines where it's like, okay, I treat it the same. It's just part of my portfolio and I play everything kind of the same, which is different for some people, but I do get it. If you're in less leagues, let's say you're only in five leagues, one of them happens to be a big money league. I could get behind that. You know, I would say back in my early days, I probably was like you. I leaned on the side of, I don't want to fuck this up too bad. You know, I don't want to get too crazy. Where in the smaller leagues, you know, like if it was a $10 entry league or something like that, fuck, I'd do some wild shit, man. It's only 10 bucks. Who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? Like I'll go ballistic.
Right? Yeah.
I'll go ballistic. If I fuck it up, I fuck it up. But yeah, for me, if you're asking my opinion on it and the way I play now, everything is basically equal. You know, like that old, you know, fucking saying to everybody, I don't see color.
Right? Yeah.
I don't see the green. Like, all looks the same to me, baby. I'm colorblind when it comes to that one. So I kind of play them all the same. Let me ask you if it is, I mean, I think we kind of established this on one of our very first show, actually. If there's no trade deadline and you're the one or two seed and you're getting a bye, we both agree that you're probably not doing anything like this week if there's no trade deadline. Like, there's no real, I'm not playing next week, so what the fuck do I need to risk this guy going down in an actual game for and making a deal for him now? Are you holding off until, hey, it's round two, now it's go time to kind of bolster it if you need to?
100%. Take away as much risk as you can in fantasy. Like, that is, at the end of the day, what we're all striving to do. And making a trade, like if you had, let's say you lock up the one seed last week and Christian McCaffrey was put on the block and you got uber aggressive, you said, this is my final piece, this is the coup de grace of the roster. Now what? Where, yeah, you might lose out on the player going to someone else if you kind of, you know, flip the old open sign to closed for the team for a week, but then you'll still be able to live to fight another day. You'll still have the assets you didn't spend to go and spend again on someone else when you kind of know. And also, we want as much information as possible whenever making decisions. That is the basis of analytics. It's basis of you know, a lot of the things that we're kind of using now to win in fantasy. We need information to make those happen. And a week's might seem insignificant, but in a week, you might see a pattern emerge, a fumble happen where benching happens, where, this guy went from 25% snap share to 50, 60% snap share. Or again, you know, whatever information you can get, doesn't matter of it, you'll have more of it. So I'm definitely shutting it down. If I know I'm getting a bye, even if it's a couple weeks out, once I know I'm having the first round bye, I am shutting it down, and I'm going to let it come to me a little bit.
All right. Well, let's play a little fun game here, because we can encapsulate what you do on the super shitty rebuilding teams at this time, too. But we're going to live in the world where there is a trade deadline. You know, probably there's people out there screaming at the at whatever the fuck they're listening. Yeah.
You got to have a trade deadline, bro. Got to have it. Must have. The NFL's got one.
Rules. Boring.
All right. So we'll treat it as all these leagues got a trade deadline, but I got real trades that have gone down. And we'll pick a contender side. We'll pick a rebuilder side. We'll just assume that these are two people making deals. And then Maddie, we'll talk through them a little bit and see if this is something you'd be comfortable doing. And we'll talk through the strategy of why. I'll make this pretty simple for us. Boom. I mean, this is an audio-only podcast, but I get to share a screen, so Maddie will get to see these.
Yeah, baby.
Right. These are pulled from the lab, southharmonff.com, or the, I'm not even going to do the hyphen. Fuck that. Got to come up with a better handle for the lab, how to get to it directly.
Yeah.
Warp.life just ruins everything, right? It's just so fucking easy to get
so
to.
Easy.
All right, Maddie, on one side, the contender is getting Jameis Winston and Jalen Warren. On the other side, the rebuilders get Malachi Corley, a second and a fourth. Now, we'll just assume, we'll talk through it. If there's a difference between lineup and best ball, in your opinion, just say something. I will. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I would do this in lineup or I would do this in best ball if there's a caveat. But just in general, we just talk through it through a 10,000-foot view. As a contender side, would you trade away Corley, 26 second, 26 fourth, to pick up Jameis Winston and Jalen Warren right before the playoffs?
In best ball, 1,000%. In lineup leagues, I'm going to lean to yes because I'm seeing the league settings here, and it does have two quarterbacks, so you do need the additional quarterback there. So, and even in lineup leagues, I'm doing something like this. Now, the 26 second is really the, in my opinion, the only thing that really is being moved of substance. So this would kind of fall to me as, you know, we had talked earlier about kicking the tires on something cheap. This comes across to me as something cheap, because a 26 second and a 26 second to me is not valueless, but it's like a 25 fourth in my eyes. Mm-hmm. Reason being, I can reload on 26 seconds a calendar year from now. So if I'm able to mortgage not my immediate future, but long term future that I can go ahead and buy back later, I'm 100% doing so. And in terms of, you know, we're trying to stay player agnostic when we're talking strategy, but diving into the weeds of it, Malachi Corley, there's a 0% chance that we see Malachi Corley really be anything, right? I mean, do we ever expect Malachi Corley to even register much in a best ball league? I don't. In a fourth, 2 years, a year from now, this is a definition of getting a lot for nothing, in my opinion, especially as a contender. This is the type of trade that happens that if you and I are in this league, Mike, and you were able to get Jameis Winston and Jalen Warren for this, my first reaction is, fuck, why didn't I? He put them on the block. Why didn't I at least put my offer out there?
I would say lineup or best ball, I'm doing this deal. Either way.
Yeah.
Best ball, it's a home run slam dunk. It's cheap to get another quarterback, possibly to make your lineup. But even in a lineup league, Maddie, I probably still want the option of having famous Jameis just in case something else happens to one of my secure starters. Jalen Warren, like, I'd say this, the Jameis Winston for the second part, like, fuck, I'll pay that. I'll pay that in lineup or best ball at this point, pushing into the playoffs. So it's a trade deadlines right now. Why not? The Jalen Warren for Corley in a fourth, I could give a shit less whether it's for best ball. Like, I'm not even a Jalen Warren guy. You know, I'm Team Najee all the way.
Me too, baby.
I'll take a fucking stab at it in case Najee gets banged up or Warren happens to get a bigger role here in these next couple weeks. Like, yeah, that's good depth. That's good cheap depth. That's a fucking home run slam dunk. Let's just say on the other side, though, the strategy from the rebuilding team, the Corley, the second, and the fourth guy, are you really going to miss any of these guys you're sending away? Like, do you really think Jameis Winston's going to have a job next year? Possibly, maybe not. Jalen Warren, like, is he ever going to be anything really for you? I get the Malachi Corley thing in the fourth. Who really gives a shit at this point? And the second's 2 years out. But if you're just going to give me free draft capital for players that aren't really going to matter to me by the time I'm ready to use that second anyways, I think I still do this as a rebuilder. Like, fuck it. Maybe Corley does something and, you know, I can get a third for him or something, you know, in the offseason, whatever it is. So I think as a rebuilder, I still do this too. I still send this shit away.
The argument I will make to not do this as the rebuilder, if this was 25 second and fourth, I would take it as a rebuilder because it's giving you liquidity into the offseason and you can make a difference in your lineup next year. Whereas the 26 for me, I don't think I'm doing this even as a rebuilder because Jameis Winston, It's not that his value is going to go up from now. It's just not. The leverage you can use for a win now approach on Jameis is never going to be higher. But he cracks any. It's like Joe Flacco going into this year. Like Joe Flacco could have got. You could have still moved him for a fourth in the offseason. You know, he still could have got some a little bit of value. And Warren, I would make the argument for Warren. It's a gamble because we all know what's coming in 25, right? These running backs are coming with vengeance. Mm-hmm. But there's a chance that Jaylen Warren is next year's Chuba Hubbard. And if this was a 25 second, I think that covers that for me. If I get a 26 second and Jaylen Warren's this year's Chuba Hubbard, then I just kind of feel like I didn't do it properly. I didn't sell but at the right time for a guy like this. So I don't know if the 20, maybe it's just the 26 for me throws me off. I'm certainly shopping these players as a rebuilder. I'm not holding on to him. I just think the return is going to leave him with almost nothing in the long term.
That's fair. That's fair. I can understand that point. But two, when I'm rebuilding, I don't give a shit what year it is. Like, I prefer the ones up front, but if you want to give me 26 and you want me to have leverage over you. Now, the one caveat I'll make is know your league. Like, and know your league about how well you think this league is going to hold up and withstand the test of time. Because we do have a lot of Dynasty redrafters out here. A lot of people who join Dynasty leagues and within 1 or 2 years, the league's fucking folded. But I'm going to assume this is, you know, this is a fucking South Harmon league that, you know, is going to withstand the test of time. Even if I hate it and I wanted to nuke the league, you know, 3 fucking years ago, it's still going because I just refuse to be a quitter. So I know 26 is going to be around and I'll be able to use that pick when 26 comes. Like, it's fine. I'm okay to take the discount. At least for me, Warren's not a giant piece. I don't really give a shit about the Corley. I feel like I'm probably selling low on Warren for a fourth. But he could just as easily be a next Miles Sanders as he could be Chuba Hubbard. We'll stick with Carolina soliloquy here. So,
that's right.
Yeah. And I'm never probably ever getting the opportunity to get a second for Jameis Winston ever again. Ever. Like, I'm going to burn money. Give me any second. Fuck it. 2030. I'll take it. Just get him off my team.
Yeah.
All right. Let me find it. Oh, this is a good one right here. Contending team. Let's call it getting Isaac Garendo. The rebuilding team, Kamani Vidal in a third. Right before the playoffs. As a contender, you willing to buy Isaac Garendo for this? The fuck it, see what happens?
100%. 100% I'm willing to do this. I mean, I don't believe this, but I mean, you got people in the industry saying that he's a top 5 running back rest of the season. And I'm not going that high. But the schedule does look good for running backs for the San Francisco 49ers. Isaac Garendo could be a big difference maker. But when I look at this, Kamani Vidal, a 25 third for Isaac Garendo, this to me is as fair a trade as it gets. If I'm a rebuilder, fuck yes, I'm taking the pick on top of what could be a better player next year. But if I'm looking to win now, Garendo, he could end up being a big-time difference maker.
I'm with you on this one. Home run, slam dunk for both sides. Like, both if I'm times. A rebuilder, I love Garendo. I got a lot of shares, but I spent fourth-round picks on him. You know what I mean? I get the third upgrade already, and I get another running back who I think probably has the same realistic long-term dynasty outlook. Like, Garendo could smash for the next couple of weeks and immediately just go back to like a role nobody cares about in 2025. Kamani Vidal could be the same thing, or Kamani Vidal could have his moment in the sun sometime next year, maybe. And I get the third round upgrade pick. Like, this is easy for both of us. If I'm a contender, Vidal's not doing shit for me. That third's not really buying me anything. And like you said, I don't believe it. I'm not like, I love Garendo. Top 5 upside, that's a little fucking rich. But hey, if it paid off and this was the price I had to pay for the playoff push, oh, baby. Walking into a championship. I like that for both of them. Doesn't matter the format. How about this one? This is clear-cut contender rebuilder. I don't even have to decipher where these two teams are at. One team's getting Dak Prescott, Chris Godwin, Marvin Mims, Jaden Reed, and Jalen Polk. And the contending side is getting Davante Adams, Tony Pollard, and Justin Herbert. What do you say on this one, contender and rebuilder?
So I would say if I'm a rebuilder, this is a fantastic trade. This could get right the ship if you're a rebuilder for you next year. And I love quick turnarounds. I hate the slow burn. I'm learning from you, Mike, to like it more. I'm learning from you to respect the 26 picks, but I'm cut from the old school. I don't like it. I don't like the long rebuilds. I like the quick turnarounds. In this trade, you might Dak, Godwin, and Jaden Reed could be three of the top four ranked players in this bunch next year. Love this from a rebuilding sense. From a contender, I agree with the principle. I think they struck out on the return. I think they struck out on who they are acquiring, because this, if you look, it, you know, I'll say this. Week 13 was a big splash of cold water in my face about Herbert and the worries that I've had about Herbert. He was on a hot streak. Love the talent. But Harbaugh will win every game 3-0 if that means he's going to win every game. And the schedule's not great for him. I don't love the players. And I think Devontae, I hate to say this about Vontae. I love Devontae Adams, but I mean, he's a sneeze away from being dust, I think. He just doesn't look in sync with Rodgers. He seems a day late, a dollar short on too many plays. And that's not going to change in the fantasy playoffs. It could only maybe get worse.
For me, this is the first one that we're going to have where league format depends, but only for one side, right? So I will say lineup or best ball, don't give a shit. The rebuilding side, I do this all day. On the contending side, I only do this in best ball. And the reasons being Dax is zero, Chris Godwin's a zero, doing nothing for me. Marvin Mims is a hope and a prayer to make my lineup, and Jalen Polk is probably hasn't made my lineup all fucking year, ever. Like, these are a lot of zeros. Jaden Reed is the only piece I'm sending away where I go, fuck, this one might hurt a little bit, especially in a best ball format. But if I look at it, I'm sending away zeros. I'm getting a quarterback, which is tough to do. Like, I'm getting a quarterback who very easily could make my lineup week in and week out for the playoffs. Tony Pollard's been really solid at running back, and Devontae Adams is a wide receiver. That's what I'll say. He is a wide receiver. I'm replacing zeros for actual production and things that can make my lineup. I do this as a contender in best ball if there's a trade deadline right now. I do it. No question about it. It's tough. It's tough to swallow. On the rebuilding side, I'll say this, Maddie. I said it's a home run for lineup or rebuild. This is fucking fantastic, but a lot of people don't like doing this. They're like, oh, Dak? Ugh. Here's the thing. The difference between Dak and Justin Herbert when both healthy in 2025 could be nothing.
Nothing.
Could be nothing. The difference between Devontae Adams and Chris Godwin in 2025 could be nothing. I do already feel good about the fact that Jaden Reed is probably a better dynasty asset long term on a rebuilder, and even in a warp perspective, could be a better person for my roster in 2025. And then whatever the fuck Jalen Polk and Marvin Mims is in a best ball, free. Absolutely fucking free. So I do this all the time. Like, this is the kind of the rebuild move that you make. Even if your rebuild is a couple years out, even if it's a long-term rebuild, I know as soon as the season starts next year, the values are kind of going to be back on Dak and Chris Godwin, and I can move them then. I don't even have to worry about it. But I get to hold them while they're at their lowest and people want to get off them. So I think this is a home run for the rebuilder. On a contender, I definitely would do it if this is a best ball league. If it's a lineup league, no thanks. Like, I'm probably good, man. I'm just going to stash these dudes in my IR. Fuck it.
Rolling with what such we got. A huge difference the IR spots make. It's a big, big deal, especially in a trade like this. And I would say this about if you're in a best ball league and some of your league mates might be a little greener in that format, I love making these type of trades because they think they're winning by not trading their 25 third. And I feel like I'm crushing by taking Marvin Mims and Jalen Polk for next year's best ball. Give me the shotgun blast across a best ball as opposed to trying to be a little bit more refined sniping with the draft pick. So this is the thing I'll definitely do with best ball.
Let's talk about this super crusty one right here. One side gets Cooper Rush. The other side gets four fourth round picks. Maddie, I'll spoil it for you. If I'm the rebuilder here tonight, they're fourth rounders. Who really gives a fuck? But I'll take four fourth rounders for my Cooper Rush. Like, I don't give a fuck about you. But as a contender, if you're buying this lineup or best ball, are you buying Cooper Rush for the price of four fourths?
And this is my distinction. This is the trade that I have to make a distinction for. In best ball, yeah, I will. Because I don't have to worry. And we have seen Cooper Rush be productive. We have seen him be a guy that would get in a lineup, especially in Superflex, 2QB formats, that nature. So a contending best ball, hell yeah, I'm making this trade. And I'm definitely making this trade no matter what format if I'm rebuilding. This is crusty, but I think this is super balanced. Mm. I think this is a great trade for both sides if it's best ball.
I'm with you. I like it for both sides. If it's best ball, especially for the Cooper Rush thing, I don't even really hate it in lineup. Like if I really have to, just in case, man, just in case, mm-hmm. let me stash Cooper Rush as my third quarterback or maybe my fourth quarterback. Cause what were the force actually going to fucking buy me anyways?
Right.
I got to rely on the waiver wire now if I did suffer an injury in the playoffs to one of my quarterbacks to pick up the next fucking Tommy DeVito or whoever the fuck it is. Like
ultra crust.
Fuck it. Take my force. Just take my force. I'll put Cooper Rush on the bench. You know what I mean? Like, fuck it.
And don't be too prideful. You have a Cooper Rush. You have that type of asset that you know is dead man walking. He's walking off the fantasy plank. Don't be too prideful. Don't be. Give me a third. No, I'll give you two thirds. I'll give you two fourths. How about four fourths? Deal. Done. Boom. That's, and then you go, all right, fine.
Done. How about something that's a little bit more expensive to finish off the show? We'll see if we got a differentiator here. Contending side getting Chase Brown. The rebuilding side getting 225 seconds, Maddie.
The distinction I'll make in this decision here is if I am a one or two seed or if Chase Brown is the last piece of the pie. This is a trade I'm definitely doing regardless of either side. I'm taking the 2 seconds in a rebuild. I want a lot of seconds going into next year's draft. There's going to be a ton of running backs. It could be the exact opposite of this year where we didn't really have much. It's mm-hmm. Bucky Irvin, it's Tracy, maybe Garendo now to end. Next year, there's going to be a lot of very good day one and day two picks. So I want these seconds. And Chase Brown could be replaced going into next year. So I definitely want to get the 2 seconds and get a little more liquid into the offseason. But Chase Brown has been so good. If I'm contending, I would absolutely move 2 seconds for Chase Brown.
Oh, getting there. This one would be a tough buy for me as a contender in lineup or best ball. I will say in lineup league, it makes more sense, especially smaller lineups. Like I'm trying to get that third running back, maybe that fourth running back if I'm well constructed and built. I think I'm kind of with you, though, in a smaller lineup league. I think I'm probably doing it. Like it kind of chaps my ass a little bit to actually do it. In a best ball league as a contender, there's no fucking way I do this. Absolutely not.
Because I'm less likely to do it in best ball. For
because
sure.
I think of what those seconds could buy and what I could break it up into three mm-hmm. pieces, four pieces. Give me four shots at a Chase Brown week versus just one shot at a Chase Brown week, right? We got the Garendo thing out there. You don't think I can go buy a Garendo and then another running back like, I don't know, Jalen Warren, who came from the first deal mm-hmm. that we looked at. Could I buy both of those guys for a second apiece? I would say yes. And at the very least, it gives me two opportunities. That's a Chase Brown thing. I want to break this up. And I could probably get like a Ray McLeod or some shit like that thrown in on the top. You know, one of them best ball darling wide receivers. One of those dudes I hope could just boop, pop one in. You know, give me a 15-point week every
Nick Westbrook Akina.
Nick Westbrook Akina, definitely. So I would say in a best ball league, there's no fucking way I do it. But in a lineup league, Yeah, I think I could get behind this. It would sting, it would suck, but I think I could do it. I think this is the ultimate peak, though. Like, I don't think I'm going much higher. I'm not going down to whatever the fuck's below Chase Brown and paying 2 seconds for as a running back position. I think this is kind of the litmus test for where the cutoff is. And you hit everything. I don't give a fuck what the format is as a rebuilder. You take the Chase Brown. I'll take the 2 seconds because odds are in 2025 with this class, Maddie, I'm probably getting something just as good, if not better. Mm-hmm. Chase Brown with one of those seconds, if not both of them. So home run, slam dunk. I love that one. That was a good one to finish on.
That's a good trade. That's a good hard-fought trade because those are the ones where the buyer, the contender, was gritting their teeth a little bit. You know, that's the only thing. Hey, McNutter, should I do this trade? All right. Man, should I do this trade? Oh, I've consulted five people. I don't know what to do it. But sometimes you just gotta do. You gotta make it happen. Like I did make a trade for Rico Dowdle. I traded a 25 second for Rico Dowdle because Rico Dowdle is now my running back too.
Ooh.
Ooh. So I paid the King's ransom. So I'm willing to pay the two for Brown if he is going to be my weekly RB2. This is a lineup league. This is a, you know, it's a keeper league. So there's a little bit less importance for, you know, the picks, a lot of movement, you know, there's a lot of factors into it, but I think I wanted to bring that up because it's kind of a scaled down version of Brown. And I love Rico Dowdle's playoff schedule.
I like it, Maddie. I thought this was a good one, diving into a little strategy on both sides. It's a lot easier as a rebuilder. Let's just say that. That's why I love it so much.
Oh, like this the time leverage of year, you have. You want to win? You want to win?
Let's go, fuckers. Come to daddy. Come to daddy. Speaking of which, Maddie, we're at the end of the episode. What's the outro song for this week? I mean, you're the guy for this. You're the guy for this one.
I mean, it's got to be American Pie.
Oh, yeah, American Pie
it's got to be. Give everyone at the end a nice chance to take a shit and listen to American Pie.
So fucking long. We just took a 55-minute episode and turned it into a 2-hour podcast. Let's go. It's mostly just American Pie.
Let's hit him with a double feature. Let's hit him with Freebird after. It'll be a 4-hour podcast.
I think at some point Spotify is going to get onto the fact that I'm just putting full-length songs at the end of the fucking episodes. They'll be like, well, you can't do that no more, Mike. We're going to get you.
You know, listeners, this is your responsibility. You got to get it going. You got to like, rate, review, share it with your league mates, share it with your enemies, share it with your family. Get the numbers so high that Spotify comes for our asses. That's what we need.
That's a good problem to have until they hit me with that fucking injunction that costs, you know, lots of money. It's a good problem to have until that happens. But we'll worry about that when we cross that bridge. Mm-hmm. Maddie, anything else before we bounce out of here, my guy?
No, I just want to make sure that everyone listening understands the importance of using the leverage at this time of year, whether you're buying or selling, rebuilding or contending. Of course, we know the leverage. It's obvious when you're a rebuilder, when you're selling to a contender. But as a contender, sometimes the leverage you use is the fact that someone will actually answer the text. They'll actually think about a trade. The activity can be the leverage that you can harp on. So make sure you don't fall asleep at the wheel at the most important time of the fantasy season.
Let's go, man. Good luck to everybody who's fighting for that last playoff spot. Hopefully it works out for you this week. And for those of you number one or two seeds, we're just going to sit back and relax and really enjoy the next couple weeks while everybody else sweats it out. Hope you have a great fucking time. You've earned it. You've earned it. Take a load off, you know? Take that Odell Beckham New York Giants trip, you know, down to the Caribbean, Bahamas, wherever the fuck they went, you know? Hang out on a boat with no shirt off.
In Timberlands. Make sure you wear Tim's.
Make sure you wear Tim's. That's all I got for you. We love you. Thanks for tapping in. We'll see y'all back here same time, same place next week for episode 125 of the 40 Chess Dynasty Football Podcast. We are out of this thing. Peace. Did you write the book of love? And do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so. Off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythm and blues. I was a lonely teenage bronc and buck with a pink carnation and a pickup truck. But I knew I was out of luck the day the music died. I started singing bye bye Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. Now for 10 years we've been on our own, and moss grows fat on a rolling stone. But that's not how it used to be when the jester sang for the king.
quote from James Dean and a voice that came from you and me. Oh, and while the king was looking down, the jester stole his thorny crown. The courtroom was adjourned. Be the day that I die. Helter skelter in the summer swelter, the birds flew off with a fallout shelter, 8 miles high and falling fast. It landed foul on the grass. The players tried for a forward pass with the jester on the sidelines in a cast. While the sergeants played a marching tune, we all got up to dance. Oh, but we never got the chance. Cause the players tried to take the field, the marching band refused to yield. Do you recall what was revealed the day the music died? We started singing. Clenched in fists of rage, no angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climbed high into the night to light the sacrificial rite, I saw Satan laughing with delight. The day the music died, he was singing. I met a girl who sang the blues, and I asked her for some happy news, but she just smiled and turned away. I went down to the sacred store where I'd heard the music years before, but the man there said the music wouldn't play. And in the streets the children screamed, the lovers cried and the poets dreamed, but not a word was spoken. The church bells all were broken, and the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, they caught the last train for the coast the day the music died. And they were singing, bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. They were singing, bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die.